anything there, but I think we've worked it. The Roaches property, there's a number of significant things here that we need to make sure we understand in terms of timing, the actual exclusion of this from the concept plan, I think, is probably one of the major issues we need to make sure we understand why. And the fact that the imposition on the potential new owners of this of some requirements that, and an, of an easement that we haven't even seen yet. So,
I'm
going to talk to us about that, Ron?
Sure. The issue of the timing, you've already discussed yesterday. Staff's recommendation is that it come in at the same time for the reasons that are proposed in footnote 100 on page 106. I don't think that requires any more discussion, or if it does, please engage me. But I'm back on page 104. We're not recommending any changes at all to the size and location of this in terms of meeting recreation mitigation needs under the statute for no undue adverse impact. Particularly the testimony of Mr. Stagels and Anderson were quite clear on this and really quite satisfied. There is, in the recommendation on the top table, there's record evidence that there may be a desire, as we say there, that there be a very minor land swap of the top portion, the road, in which there would be enhanced motorized access. AMC may not have a desire to be involved in that. BPL may very much have a desire for that enhanced motorized access for providing to from Namakanta, both for recreation and for getting wood out of that area into the west. That's the state's wood, by the way. And then in return for BPL providing to AMC certain isolated acreage adjoining property. But that's record evidence, and I don't know that that's a controversial provision, but that's the only, and that would be subsequent to this. The issue of whether the Roaches property should be part of the concept plan boundaries, meaning the PRP sub-district, is something that staff consultants gave a fair amount of thought to. Our view is that it serves no useful practical purpose, no necessary legal purpose, and could have some quite subsequent unexpected, unintended consequences to involve the Roaches, which would be owned by AMC in the PRP subdistrict, principally related to the fact that any amendments to the PRP subdistrict that AMC may need would have to go through landowner approval, maybe multiple landowner approvals, if depending on the mechanism, and could be quite confounding. You can imagine a situation where AMC owns the land, where any easement that's applied to it, as part of our recommendation, AMC desires to do something very minor, add some additional huts or whatever that might require a change in the plan amendment. And then they have to trundle off to Plum Creek or maybe a group of landowners and say, please, can we do this? and then get approval from LURC. And, you know, it really made no sense to us why it should be put through that process. There's nothing in our view, Aga should probably comment on first that on this, that having it as part of the PRP subdistrict adds to what you are getting. And any protections that you want to ensure that the promised and stated purpose of it can be achieved by an easement that's put on that land is a much more direct way of doing it than having it run through. You know, the amendment process makes sense in some ways under lands that are going to be developed with Plum Creek. So,
yeah, in fact, just to supplement that, our view is that actually having this property and the intent of this property to serve a primitive recreation mitigation role could be challenged by having it in the PRP subdistrict because of the complexities associated with the plan amendment process, which we will get into in a few pages. So our sense is that the better way to achieve that mitigation and that purpose, the primitive recreation purpose, is to take this plant, take the Roaches property out of the PRP subdistrict and provide whatever assurances the commission wishes to have on that land through a conservation easement.
Okay, if there are no further questions on that, really as a follow-through on that, the last table or row on page 104, the land use zoning, it would be, you know, your normal MGN zoning, like any number of other lands are on this. The purchasers, we're not recommending a change. I think you understand this assignment provision, the purchase price. Under the timing and sale, it's the discussions we've had, and our recommendation is to ensure, I'm using that word intentionally, ensure that it not just go to TNC, but that it goes to AMC. And then I think we're up to page 107. And here's the issue that we're presenting to you through this recommendation in a nutshell. Unlike the proposal that Plum Creek made, which goes to a question, unlike the proposal Plum Creek made in the legacy and balance easement to the probably first or second question, which is, okay, you intend for these conservation lands to have these purposes, how does the commission know that you will walk the talk? The answer Plum Creek provided was, here's the legal easements. Here's the easements that bind us to do certain things. And it may be that there are terms you want to change, but the legal mechanism that Plum Creek offered and the TNC offered for the legacy lands to ensure that the conservation values are protected, that they walk the talk, was these easements. There is not a parallel offering to date in the record by either TNC or particularly by AMC that the purposes that they testified that they would use the land for would indeed stay with you. In their brief, they address this issue square right on, square. And they said, essentially, AMC is a 100-year-old organization with a long and reliable history, and therefore, trust us. And we're taking the position which is trust but verify. In the same way, we're asking Plum Creek to walk the talk, we're asking AMC to walk the talk here. We're not suggesting substantive provisions that go, in our view, one iota beyond the talk of what they testified to, both orally and in writing. And that's reflected on page 107 in the footnote 101. But we are suggesting, however speculative, however unlikely, that the commission could be in the position that 5 years after AMC acquires this property, for reasons that we can't predict, they need to sell it, they need to use it for other purposes, et cetera, et cetera. And in that case, the recreational mitigation for which this property, we believe, needs to be secured and provided would no longer be met. So that's why the recommendation that immediately after AMC acquires this property, a pretty narrow easement. This is not an easement where we're suggesting there have to be all the things you were just talking about on forestry. We're not suggesting that it's regulatorily required to secure this property for wildlife reasons, and therefore forest practices are implicated. There's no record evidence of that. So these guaranteed terms through the easement go to the type of recreation mitigation, assuring it that Mr. Stagels and Anderson testified as necessary, primitive, non-motorized recreation, and that's the purpose of it.
Anybody? Go ahead, Dan.
In general, hopefully not in this context, but in general, the whole question of limiting public access in terms of motorized access is a major hot-button issue in the place I come from. I mean, it's a big issue. While I support this recommendation, I think that there is a place for primitive non-motorized recreation and that it must be somehow provided for in these easements. I think it's important to point out, I did some calculations and I'm just ask you if they seem reasonable. Of the 360,000 acres that's being set aside for conservation, the roaches constitute approximately 29,000 acres, which means that...
Well, not to interrupt, but that's not a correct calculation.
It's not.
Because the 360,000 acres is the easement lands.
Okay.
If you add the lands that we think are total regulatorily required, leaving aside the 45,000 acres of the number five bog, you have to add to the 360,000, the 29,000 acres of the roaches.
Oh, okay.
So you're really at 390,000.
All right, so 390,000.
Right.
Of that 390,000, approximately 360,000 or 361,000 provide for motorized recreation. This constitutes less than 10%, if I'm calculating correctly, of restricted motorized recreational opportunity. Is that?
I think the broad point you're making is correct and indicative of our thinking. Evan, when we get to it or now, can talk about the motorized access to the 360,000 is really guaranteed through the road easements.
Right.
As well as through the snowmobile easements.
Snowmobile easements. That's right.
So, I mean, I would hate to see a headline that says LURC eliminates motorized access.
Right.
Because my neighbors would hang me. I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but I mean, they certainly would not be pleased. I might have to move. And I think it's important to point out that primitive recreation, non-motorized recreational opportunities are important because there are so few of them and they're endangered. But yet they shouldn't dominate in the jurisdiction. And I think people need to be assured that the vast acreage that's being set aside here does not prohibit motorized recreation. I, for some reason, I think that needs to be made clear.
I think it's time to ask this question, but even more important than motorized access, that all of these lands are subject to fish and wildlife laws for hunting and fishing and trapping. That's not written into anything, but I...
Jerry can comment on this, but the only way that your concerns, I believe, I want to think about this maybe over a break, but the only way I think your concerns are even touched on in the easements is through access, right? And there is no, the public has provided access as specified in those easements. So there's no limitation in any way there. In terms of the Roaches property, public access by foot, except where in narrow one corridor limit, is also being granted in full. We haven't seen the language of that, which goes to my earlier point, that it's a descriptor that's in the written testimony of AMC and in their oral testimony before you. I think to the extent that it is critical, and I haven't heard any intention otherwise, that those rights be protected, that can be in it. There was record evidence discussion of bear baiting, and this is why I'm trying to be careful, because I'm trying to keep a lot in my head here. There was record evidence of bear baiting. There was discussion, I believe, in cross-examination, potentially by George Smith of Walter Graff, about the limits on bear baiting that were put in the KIW easement that AMC had. That is the only thing off the top of my head, Commissioner Schaefer, that comes to mind in terms of expressed limits on fish and game laws that I'm aware of. But I can go back and look more carefully. But maybe, yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, my point is, in reference to Ed, if you want to hunt and fish on the Roaches, you can do that, although it's on foot. But I just think we have to reassure the public that overlaying this huge amount of acreage, that the state of Maine will enforce and treat fish and wildlife laws as they do everywhere else. And, given access, we will be able to participate in those according to state law. I don't know if that needs to be included or if it's inferred, but maybe Jerry can help us out there.
Well, it doesn't need to be stated. You're exactly right. The laws generally apply generally in Maine are going to apply to all the land that we're talking about, including the easement areas and the Roaches and everything else. And as Ron says, really the way this becomes relevant is through potential limits on access, not on substantive restrictions on hunting or fishing or trapping.
Well, although in the Roaches, what I'm saying off the top of my head is that, and I agree with Jerry, but I want to say we have not seen any language. It's all a general statement in the testimony and a general representation from AMC. There may be language on limitations on bear baiting activities, and I'm not sure if there are limitations on other particular types of hunting activity. That's the only one that comes to mind, but I think generally there is no, I didn't understand their testimony as having any intent to prohibit to post land. Generally, and this may be a subject for which you put out your wishes and your recommendations and you get 30 days of comment here. I'm also going back to the balance easement.
I think there's language in the balance easement about reserving the right to charge a fee for bear baiting. Does that ring a bell for you, Ron?
It doesn't, but it could be there. It is the grantor's intent and objective. I'm reading from Section 7, Commissioner Schaefer, under the balance easement. I'm now going back to the balance easement off the Roaches. Sorry, don't mean to skip around. It is the grantor's intent and objective to allow non-commercial, non-motorized public access on and across and use of the protected property for traditional low-intensity recreational uses, paren, including, by way of example and without limitation, hunting, fishing, trapping, picnicking, swimming, boating, nature observers, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, and enjoyment of open space, close paren, and to maintain opportunities for such uses of the protected property. Grantors reserves the right to make reasonable rules and regulations for different types of public uses and to control, limit, or temporarily prohibit by posting and other means any use by the public, including without limitation, night use, camping, local activity, open fire, motorized vehicles, use of equipment in areas of access for purposes of protecting public safety, protecting conservation values of the protected property, ensure compliance. Grantor reserves the right to allow motorized recreational use of the protected property, including snowmobiling, in the sole discretion of the grantor, and that gets into the road easements that we talked about. I can't immediately pull up, Jerry, the language on bear baiting. Oh, I see. Thank you, Aga. It is in the next paragraph that deals with the ability to charge fees. Grantor reserves the right to charge public fees, an amount of grantor's reasonable estimate that will recompense grantors for the cost of dot, dot, dot. Notwithstanding any other provision hereof, grantor expressly reserves the right to require a permit and charge fees for bear baiting.
Just in the interest of the sort of full discussion here, though, absent that language, the landowner could prohibit hunting under the easement. I think we need to be clear about that. I mean, it's up to the landowner. Now, I'm not advocating that we build in perpetuity a right for the public to hunt on private property. But nonetheless, I think we all need to recognize that unless there is explicit language, and that, again, I'm subject to your advice, but unless there's explicit language that says that hunting, leg hole trap for bear baiting, unless there's specific language that says that will be allowed, if that's absent in the easement, then the landholder has the right to post the land and limit those activities. Is that not correct?
Yes.
I thought what Ron just read said that they had provided for it in the language of the easement.
Yeah,
easement,
it just says absent that.
But it does not apply to the Roaches. It's like, was the
Roaches, my view is the Roaches is an entirely different situation.
I'm just being clear. I'm not arguing.
And the what they put in their easement, I guess, remains to be seen. But that property, we've been responsive to some degree to the concerns expressed by the motorized people. I mean, the state's request for access has been granted so they can get to the Namakana property and have a continuity of trail systems. But it's always been clear that AMC has certainly made it clear in their policies on their existing property, to me, points the way to what they want to do. And I'm not sure that it's within our purview to say they can't do that. We may not agree with it or whatever, but that's certainly as a landowner, that's their objective, then I think we need to respect that.
I agree.
And If they don't want to have bear baiting, then they don't have to have bear baiting.
But in what way would they prohibit that? By posting?
Bear baiting? You just don't allow it. I think there's a state law on bear baiting now since that requires people to seek affirmative land open permission to do bear baiting. So that's why these programs have become charge programs, because they forced administrative role onto the landowner as well as onto the person wanting to do it. So it's a matter of state law that they have to have landowner permission to do it.
Well, that would be my preference, is to see the easements, no matter who owns them, to comply with state law, so they don't have to worry about setting limits on or bucks only, that sort of thing. The state overlies the entire area and uses their management expertise and their enforcement, you know, the warden service, et cetera, so that it is a given that that's over. And if it does allow for limiting bear baiting, that's part of state law. That's what I'm saying. It would be easier just to use the state. If it has to be put into the wording, I think it should be referred to as complying with current state fish and game.
Okay. Now, I would agree with that. Another little fly in the ointment is we have a fellow up our way who is guiding photographers to bait sites. So, you know, somebody figures that out.
Well, and in effect, hiking, I mean, foot access only just physically limits bear baiting except around the perimeter. So, I mean, I don't know where they're coming from, but if it's within state law, that's fine. I just think it should apply to the whole.
I understand.
So there's nothing in the easement language, is there, that restricts the landowner from limiting motorized vehicle access in certain areas of the land? What I'm thinking about is motorized ATVs in particular. Seems like the landowner should be able to limit where they're able to go. I mean, on trails that are designed for ATVs as opposed to off-trail explorations.
The basic structure, we're back to the balance easement now and the legacy easement. Let's put the road to the side. The basic structure is the public access rights, the non-motorized public access rights, are granted in the balance easement. And then there are a series of road easements that Evan talked about that grant motorized access to particular identified locations.
And snowmobile trail easements.
And snowmobile easements. I apologize those two. So you're really looking at three different documents.
In essence, Commissioner Hilton, the remainder of the balance easement and the legacy easement, the use by the public of those lands for vehicular or motorized purposes is at the landowner's discretion.
Okay.
The grantor reserves the right to make reasonable rules and regulations governing most of these activities, including motorized access in the balance easement.
Motorized access in the balance easement is not prohibited. It's just not explicitly granted to the public or to the holder and the third-party holder to enforce. It's, as Jerry said, it's reserved except for in either the snowmobile easements, motorized, or the specific road easements that we're going to get to in the additional plan elements. Does that clarify?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know whether it's worth noting, but in our lakes management, plan, we designate, we have classifications of water bodies based on resource values and development potential. One of those classifications is remote ponds, and they are accorded the greatest protection. One of the conditions for classification as a remote pond is no motorized access. So I think one of the things we need to think about is mandating motorized access, even in the balance easement. I think we need to look at that in terms of its impact on our other regulatory schemes. Are we giving up our ability to preserve the values of remote ponds?
Okay.
I'm not expressing this well, but I think
No, I understand your point, and I'm certain Jerry understands your point, to be what is the interplay between what the easement might give up and the current LURC zoning and other regulatory restrictions on certain access in different places.
Yeah, my sense, but we will certainly look back into this, is that neither the vehicular road access easements being offered or the snowmobile easements infringe upon any remote pond protections, but we can certainly confirm that.
But those remote pond protections obviously are not granted in perpetuity. They're granted as long until LURC changes its approach, if it does.
No, and not granted in perpetuity, but also the designation of pond that is not now designated as a remote pond might conceivably, in the future, be so designated.
We understand.
But if you provide motorized access today, under our current regulatory schema, you preclude that designation.
Yeah, we'll go back and check. But the road easements that are being granted are really...
I'm angels on the head of a pin.
No, you're not. But I think it's a good point. But just the road easements that are being granted are essentially, in most cases, I think, and Evan and Aga have studied this way more than I have, are arterial. They're not into the little pieces. But, I mean, Evan, you may want to comment on that.
That is, for the most part, true. These are the backbone roads, logging roads. In the system, some 57 miles, there are a couple of branches that go down to the primitive camp siting areas at Lily, I think at Lily Bay, perhaps also at Spencer Bay.
Okay. Back to the roaches, I guess is where we departed from.
Meanwhile.
Are we clear on what's being recommended there and comfortable with it? That basically the removal of Roach's property from the PRP zone so that it's a standalone property, but that it is going to close simultaneous with the rest of the, presuming we can move ahead here, that it would close and there would be easements in place to protect the property for the values we believe are critical to its to the whole concept plan.
And I think it's important to make explicit that non-motorized recreation in that area is mitigation,
right,
for adverse impact on primitive recreational opportunities under our regulatory scheme. Okay. Is that fair, Jerry?
Yes, it is. Well said.
Okay. Bog properties. I don't know as we need to say a lot about this. It's not part of the concept plan the way I think you said, Ron. And,
well, it's not zoned as part of the PRP.
Someday I would like to know how you get $10 million for a bog, but that's another discussion. But
very valuable bog.
Yeah.
So
I hope so.
given that, what part does it play in these proceedings?
I'm going to make two comments. From a regulatory point of view, staff's recommendation is that it doesn't play a part. Not because that's our personal view, but that because there's no record evidence that we're aware of, none, like zero that we're aware of, that says that number five bog fulfills acquisition of the number five bog fulfills a regulatory purpose that we've identified for conservation offsets. Having said that, what I said yesterday was there's a purchase and sale agreement, which we have no objection to or opinion about, in which TNC has offered and Plum Creek has accepted to purchase the number five bog properties, and some of the purchases front-ended a little bit, as we noted in a footnote 103 on page 108, Commissioner White, within a five-year period and provided the funds. And we're not in any way suggesting the commission involve itself to endorse or upset the apple cart, so to speak. It's, as far as we understand, it's a existing legally binding contract between two private parties.
A contract that just happens to be simultaneous with these other things that are going on.
Well, it doesn't have to be simultaneous under the way
we're
conceiving.
Well, no, within the 5 years, but I mean, are you saying that we could take it out of the books, or that goes that it doesn't?
I'm suggesting you don't change anything. You leave well enough alone.
Something about sleeping bags.
that the history may be interpreted as being that Plum Creek was prepared to offer for sale this number 5 bog as, in its view, part and parcel of this entire concept plan being approved. And that may be the condition in which Plum Creek was prepared to offer it and the position in which TNC was prepared to accept it. That doesn't have to be an opinion or a regulatory requirement of this commission. That's what we're saying.
So we're back to your recommendation of indifference that we talked about yesterday.
Right.
Okay. Additional plan elements, which look like the trails, the snowmobile trails, which we have talked about, the peak-to-beak trail easement.
Peak-to-beak.
That's an interesting one. The hut-to-hut trail.
We've laid out our recommendations here, and I can go through a brief overview if you'd like, or just respond to any questions.
Just a little bit of a comment on the trail, the peak-to-peak trail thing, where you really kind of made an interesting change in how you might view that in terms of converted it to total land area as opposed to a description of a linear, and why you just chose to do that.
Sure, I'm happy to talk about that. Our sense from reviewing the record was that there was very little evidence that the peak-to-peak trail, as was being proposed to be configured in this plan, served a regulatory purpose. And in fact, there was a lot of concern expressed by a number of parties and witnesses as to the feasibility and functionality of the trail easement as was being proposed. What staff is recommending, first of all, we are acknowledging that hiking trails and hiking trail easements are an important mitigating element that becomes the part of the recreation mitigation package here. And instead, what we are suggesting is taking that 67 linear miles offered by 15 feet wide easement offered by Plum Creek and providing some flexibility in terms of how that is placed on the landscape in the future and what function and purpose it should serve, and allowing BPL, in coordination with the landowner, to make decisions about what needs exist in the future with respect to hiking trails, whether those needs are, they could very well identify and find down the road that the need does exist for a peak-to-peak type trail that involves extended overnight hikes and use it in the way. There's nothing here that would preclude BPL or Plum Creek from reaching an agreement and using those 67 miles or the equivalent square footage in the manner being proposed right now. We're simply offering some flexibility here for should BPL and Plum Creek find that other needs arise with respect to hiking trails and that a series of day loops better serve the needs of the area, that opportunity and that ability is built in here. So that's really the basis or the underlying rationale for converting these 67 miles into a total square footage that hiking trail easements could be located as one easement or a series of easements in the region, and again, either in the balance easement or the legacy easement lands, with BPL taking the lead but working in conjunction with the landowner to locate and determine what the need is in the region.
Aga, do you have any this, I really like what you've proposed here. I am wondering about the timing it seems kind of open-ended, unless I'm missing something here, with respect to how would we know that it would happen? You know, how would it be implemented?
We haven't gotten to that level of detail in these recommendations, but that's a great point, and we will certainly come back to that if you direct us to come up with the implementation mechanism to make sure that this does happen. My sense is that at the very least, a provision ought to be in place to ensure that, you know, kind of a use it or lose it provision for BPL to ensure that those trails are sited within the 30-year term of the plan. That's just an idea. It's something that we would certainly want to come back to and work out an implementation mechanism that is meaningful.
And just to add, I'm just thinking about this on the fly, Commissioner Hill, but you could even take the same kind of approach that's being recommended for the road easements, that when a certain number of units are developed in a certain area, you know, a certain number of trails, roughly, without being too locked in, have to accompany that to keep progress on this issue going forward.
I think the record, if I recall correctly, there was concerns expressed about the design, the width, a number of things with regard to the peak-to-peak trail. And I think that this is a, you know, barring complications that we are as yet unaware of, and there again underscoring the importance of the comment period here, this seems to be a really creative and very useful recommendation in terms of how we address that, rather than locking ourselves into that peak-to-peak trail 15 feet wide.
I certainly agree with that. Like, if this, yeah, if we can convince people that this is the way to go, I think it's a much more beneficial use of recreational property. There are a lot of trails in the area, and I didn't hear any convincing talk at the hearings about the trail being of great value, except in somebody's mind that it would be nice to walk beyond one top of one mountain and walk to the top of the other mountain. But I really liked the idea of having, and I was just trying to figure out what it was. But you've got some 1,000 acres or something like that to deal with here if you spread it around.
Yeah, I think the intent was well founded. It just didn't.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is a great way to honor that intent, I think.
I think we'd be guided a lot by whatever comments we get back on this one. I would.
Yeah, my sense is we would, in particular, want to hear from BPL on their thoughts on what kind of an implementation mechanism would be workable here.
Okay. Any other comments on that? If not, I don't. The hut-to-hut trail easement. There's no changes recommended there. It's almost 12:30. Okay.
There appears to be some light at the end of this tunnel. Yeah. Over on page four.
Can I ask one quick question about the hut to hut?
Yeah.
It's supposedly going to end at Moosehead. At least that's the intent. If it's an overriding success and they want to extend it out of the concept plan area towards Katahdin, is there an allowance for that, or is it the end of the road, pretty much?
It comes out of the area in the other direction. So.
Well,
You mean across on the east side?
Yeah.
In the balance easements?
Yes.
No, there isn't right now. In the what the balance and legacy easement were recommending is, and I'm not saying this is good, what we're recommending is some limited rights of BPL to establish trails working with the landowners in moving west from Rockwood, potentially, or whatever. But to the extent that in the testimony, Larry Warren, or the person is the executive director of the trails, his name escapes.
Dave Heron,
I apologize, expressed some interest in moving the trail beyond. I think you'd have to, if it's extensive, if it's a wide easement, as it is, I think you'd have to look to the amendment process. And that may be something that you may direct us to look at to reserve the possibility or just use it in the amendment process. I don't know. I mean, it would be you know, there would be some cost to the landowner from that, and you may want to, I could go back and look at whether there are sale options that are there, but I don't think so. That would be pretty open-ended.
I mean, we could do that with every single thing that's going on in the, and let's just trust the amendment process,
We could also look back at the terms of the balance and legacy easements and see whether, you know, my sense is that much of that kind of a trail system might already be implicitly a permitted use because of the underlying zoning. So, for example, building a trail, I think, would be, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Ron, is a permitted use under the terms of the balance and legacy easements, and there are some provisions in those easements to allow for backcountry huts.
Let's take this under advisement. I think we're getting into a very, very gray zone right here. No, I think it's a good point. It's a good point both for this specific issue, and it's another angle or data point to think about the amendment issue, another just aspect of it, and the conundrum of freezing in time things that, you know, may need to organically develop that would be perfectly appropriate.
It just occurs to me, and again, thinking off the top of my head here, that proposals for activities or changes that enhance the values of the conservation easement and that are not objected to by the easement holder or the property owner, could there be a facilitated amendment process or something so that it, in other words, the activities that we think that everyone mutually agrees should be encouraged, can the approval of those activities be facilitated somehow so that you don't create this disincentive for positive change?
Okay, I take your point. And Jerry's really good at drafting that kind of thing.
Is that day 7 of his vacation?
No, that's nuts.
All right. Did we discuss to your satisfaction the vehicular road access easements? I think we've just covered those at a couple of other points in time.
I have one question. That's 24-hour road access. Good. That's it.
Does that mean that BPL maintains those roads?
No, I don't think so. The landowner is still stuck with that obligation.
Yeah,
it says they're
going to
donate the roads, not donate an easement. Is it? Or, well, maybe it is a road easement.
There are two or three conversations going on. Having a hard time.
Yeah. We had a question about the roads being open 24 hours, I guess.
Yes, let us make sure.
Okay.
But the answer to that is?
It's 25 after 12. I think we'll take a break here. We'll be back about 1:15 to pick it up, and hopefully we can finish. We're on page 115. hopefully there's a few blank pages between there and 127. But